Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, March 27th, 2004. Today's session is entitled Music, the third practice for the Loma Retreat. Session number LOMA 2004-03. Let's listen in.
SDG, Soli Deo Gloria, to God alone the glory. And so the collection of this book ends with a song that gathers many joyces to join in that anticipation of praise. So let's sing verses, let's do 1, 4, 5, 6.
introduce a few more people. Like I said, people that will wander in appropriately. Scott Ossang is up here. He's our village musician. And then right behind her over here is Carolyn Giese. She is the crafts queen. And so at 2:30 today, if anyone is going to wander down into that area, Carolyn will be doing an activity that anybody is invited to participate in. And then especially I want to introduce my husband. This is David Sellers. We'll be hosting the party tonight in Chalet for over there. And David is librarian here. So I think I've seen the...
Okay. I've been asked to start off this session, I guess because I do some music in the church, so I don't actually want to talk very much. Maybe I'll be a little more active in the conversation part, but I actually like to start off with a question that we just brainstormed together, and I've actually asked Marsh to just sort of put some of these brainstorms down on a board. So, and the question's very simple and very basic, but let's just start at the very beginning and ask, why is it that we sing in church? Why is it that we sing in the Christian community? I think there are lots of reasons, and I don't think we often take the time to ask that question. So let's just sort of do a brainstorming. So call them out, and in clarity, we'll ask for more of it.
An expression of unity and harmony.
Singing is an expression of unity. So unity,
as in doing something as a community and sharing faith, and but just the harmony of it.
So implicit in that is it's a community activity. And I mean, if you look sociologically, you find that all kinds of groups have songs, and all kinds of social movements have songs. And I would call the church a social movement. And I think every living thing actually has a song. So I mean, what you say says something important about singing and community. It builds a sense of movement and purpose and unity. Others.
Luther, didn't he say he sings praise twice?
Hey, singing is praying twice. Singing is evidence of the Spirit among us. It's how some of the great prayers of our faith are expressed through music. Okay. If you go to an African American church, or my experience recently in Liberia, there's literally, the services are about two and a half to 3 hours long, at least the two that I went to on the two Sundays I was there, and about the first half hour is singing. And in some sense that, you know, the Spirit doesn't descend unless there's been enough singing to call forth that presence. But it's true in an African American community, oftentimes you'll just sing until it seems as though you've sung enough to really start worshiping. What else? Why else do we?
I think as a symptom it goes first to it makes us feel good. Singing is an expression that or maybe not even feel good, but it is an expression of emotion, and so it has the power to lift up, it has the power to unite in a mood, whether that be a happy, joyous mood or a somber lament or whatever it is, but it affects our emotions, and I think it's because of those first two that it unites us in that mood and it focuses on us in the prey of the assembly.
It touches our soul.
If you were to label singing right brain or left brain, what would you label it? It tends to be associated with more right brain activity. I mean, people who can't sometimes speak after a stroke can sing. It comes from a different side of the brain. But I think you said an important thing that it's not just joy and happiness, but also pain and longing and that. I don't don't know if we could get into conversation about to what extent it happens in camps, the full spectrum of emotions being expressed through song. But.
I think so much of faith is remembering. And I think songs, you know, I mean, you go back to the camp song in your childhood, even if the lyrics were terrible, it takes you back there. Or some songs make you cry the minute they start because it was at your parents' funeral.
Yeah.
So I really think there's something about memory in song that's really powerful.
This song, Soli Deo Gloria, was sung at my father's funeral, and I can never sing it without just sort of breaking up. And you probably all have songs that are connected to very specific experiences, whether it be a funeral or a baptism or an important time or a camp experience. But we sing to remember, and a lot of the stories of our faith come to us through song. And I would imagine that most people in our church learn the faith primarily through music, more than maybe even through sermons. Can I say that? Or Bible study. So when someone leaves church on Sunday or leaves camp at the end of an experience, what they will remember is most likely to be a song rather than a word spoken.
When somebody asked Bonhoeffer how he lived in his last 6 months of isolation in prison, he said, "I was never alone." He said, "I was surrounded by the doxologies. I had memorized the hymns, I had memorized the scripture," and I've often thought of that because all of us in our life sometime are going to be in that alone spot, and we will still be able to have those things we memorize, which songs are key to that.
Thank you.
We talked this morning about mystery a little bit, and I think music is one of those mysterious gifts that we have received. A tremendous power in music, and especially music that are coupled with lyrics. The capability to kind of bypass your brain and go right to your heart. And as a result, I think it's a mysterious power to persuade and to allow us to remember and to coax and prod. I remember a professor of mine talking about that once, and just, you know, it really hit me between the eyes how powerful that really is, you know, and oftentimes we not thinking about it on that level. But yet, as musicians and as people who use that gift, you know, it's important that we keep that in mind, because as anything that has power, you know, it can be used for good or ill. But, you know, in a church setting, I think, in a camp, you know, that I think that sense of power that it can give and to motivate people and our worshiping community is, you know, it's a great thing, and I think we don't often acknowledge it on a conscious level, but we all know what it does.
There's a way that music just, as you said, gives power to text that could not happen without music. Now, Diane, is it you that's recently had a birthday?
Yes.
When was it?
Thursday. Do I remember?
We're going to say happy birthday to Diane together. So, together.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Diane. Happy birthday to you.
Now, what was wrong was that we did it. Should we do it properly?
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Diane.
sing.
Something that singing those songs like this one that have been known for ages, and older songs, I think it's remarkable having the Psalms and Mary's song that we can then sing. Connects us to a history that has gone long before us, and I think that's where some of that mysterious power comes in, and the memory then is even deeper than what we've memorized or what we've learned or even our own experience. It's a thing that's kind of in our being, in our soul. And Herb Brokering has a wonderful way of talking about this, that it not only connects us to this history, but it connects us to the heavenly chorus, which is singing God's praises at all times. And so in our worship experiences, and when we join in that singing in our camps, wherever that may be, we kind of step out of our own time and into the heavenly chorus for that time, and then we kind of step back and enter into our daily lives. But for a moment, we are connected to just this huge history and the eternal, both through our music. And I think that's ever since he said that, I sometimes think, wow, I'm singing with the angels right now.
And to acknowledge our ancestors and that we sing, because songs have been passed down to us to sing. We're constantly creating new music. And everything that used to be, everything that is now contemporary or traditional, it used to be contemporary. We're always creating new songs, but things have been passed down to us from our ancestors, and that we join in this long line.
I think another thing that music does for us is a expression of our creed. I think it's done in a creedal kind of a way of. We all join together and say, this is what we believe. And maybe even sometimes when we look at the songs that are suspect in theology, we say, and we have paradoxes too, and we have differences of opinion, but we join together and are willing to sing together.
I thought of when you had us do the words and then us sing the effort, music goes beyond words.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the words are important, but the music takes you into the farthest reaches, it seems to me.
I think something connected to that is sort of just the rhythm of music, and the fact that music is a body activity and is connected to our bodies. And experience in Africa brought this alive to me, that music is such a... In East Africa, one of the words that, I forget what language it is, that people use for white people is those people who can sing without moving. Moving would not be optional, would be simply part of the song, going beyond the words, but... And we move in Lutheran worship. It just tends to be up and down, not side.
Our hips don't move.
Yeah. I want to just go back, so this doesn't get lost, in that how music really is an expression of and shapes our theology. Because we don't often think about this, that we think that we study theology and then songs are written that expresses that, and I don't think that that's how it happens. I think oftentimes we learn our theology through music. And Carl Barth, when he was asked to sort of characterize or summarize his theology very briefly, just said, Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. His theology has been shaped by a song. Singing isn't really a neutral exercise. We don't just versify the Bible, but we state what we hold to be true about God, and we hope that those who sing these words will believe them and that they'll come true. So there's something about music that has a very strong, we have a lot of teaching music in our tradition, and when you say there's power in music, that's part of the power, is that it really teaches. But,
right.
Yeah. Let's go here first.
had a similar experience in South Africa. We went there last year with the music, and first thing that we did was went to a church to be welcomed by Sunday school kids and confirmation kids and singing and stuff. And then they asked us to sing as camp staff. And so we did. And one of the comments that the South African leader made afterwards was, "You sing with one voice. You need to learn to sing in more than one voice." Because their harmony is just so incredible, you wouldn't believe it. And we're all singing the same notes in our camp songs. And, something I'll never forget is that it's that music. I mean, it is, and there's no guitars, there's no nothing, but boy, did they take off.
Yeah.
We were in South Africa, talked to a youth worker, asked what problems they have in youth ministry. And he says, "The biggest problem I have is getting them to stop singing so I can teach them." And it's true.
Maybe one thing to put up there is that we sing because we can. And perhaps we were created to. And going back to last session on creation, that perhaps every creature has a song, and our job is just to sort of join in with our own song. That all of creation, all of creation.
How
sings.
Can I keep from singing?
How can I keep from singing?
Some would debate if we all can.
But. Yeah, we can talk about that.
There's two more. Okay. One is some ways there's a whole tradition of our singing being a practice session for the heavenly song. Mm-hmm. When you read the book of Revelation. And then the other is singing, or music, and especially drums, kind of, it connects us to kind of the rhythm of the universe,
that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the heart of
there's a heartbeat.
There's a heartbeat of creation.
Any last, one hasn't been mentioned that I'm aware of is that we're commanded to. I mean, it's pleasing to God that we sing, and God says, sing to the Lord a new song. And so by singing, we're following some sort of commandment or wish by God that we sing praises. So music is a really deep, deep thing in our church and in our culture as well. We can't talk about music without talking about the culture we live in. And maybe this is just to preface our conversation, but I believe there's no other culture in this country that hears as much music as we do. We're constantly surrounded by music. Even this morning at breakfast, Diane and Janet, there was music playing coming out of the kitchen. This is my little pet peeve. But we're just inundated with music in elevators everywhere. But I also think that there's probably very few cultures that sing together as little as we do in this culture, and that hasn't always been the case. But music, corporate singing is counterculture, and we have to recognize that that's the case. There was a time when there was family singing around the piano, and there was music in schools, and hymns that we all knew by heart. Yep. And that time has changed. And so we have to recognize that every time that we do sing in church, it's a countercultural activity in a performance society when our job mainly is to sit and listen to someone else perform for us. Every time that we join in a song, we're doing something different. And I think that needs to be embraced. But maybe our conversation now for the rest of the time could move from the why we sing to the what and how we sing in our outdoor ministry settings. And I don't think that this session is necessarily disconnected from the last conversation we had. I had to kind of bite my tongue and just say, you know, if there's not a sense of love of creation, the immediate thing I want to say is, what songs are you singing? Are the songs that you sing in your camps talking about love and care of creation? Well, if they're not, then I just want to say, duh. Maybe you can just use that as a jumping off kind of, you know, what is it that you're singing? How are you singing? Why are you singing in your camp settings? And what are the struggles and joys of and concerns that you have around song and corporate singing? Is that a good enough starting point? Then I'll just kind of hand it over to Margie.
When you said that we are, one reason we sing is because we can and we're commanded to, we're also commanded to not sing praises if they are empty and void and separate from a life that is filled with work on behalf of the stewardship of creation and the peace and justice of the world. So if our lives aren't reflecting the praises and the thanks that we're giving to God, and what we are praying to God for, then our singing is shallow. And so I would say not only should our songs be inclusive of a love and respect for creation, but also for our fellow human beings, well, I suppose they're a part of creation, but and a concern that the needs of all are being met, because that is the song, the music that is appealing to God.
Yeah, Amos was criticizing useless worship that was divorced from the world in which people were living. And I think that God doesn't want us just to sing and make noise, but to be intentional in what we sing about and have that be connected to our deepest values that we hold. So anyway, let's start.
One thing I've noticed in my leading of camp songs for some years is none of the fun ones have good theology.
That's not true.
Well, I think we borrow a lot from you know the contemporary Christian music thing, you know, and a lot of that theology doesn't express a love of creation and things like that. Sometimes it does, but I think that's one of the problems, is having songs that the kids really get engaged in, that are really fun. I mean, what was the one we sang, you know, that was so beautiful about creation, you know, that's not going to work, you can't, you know? And so that's one of the frustrations.
I guess I would ask if you either have that experience or what. I mean, I have a pet peeve of calling things camp songs when they're, you know, songs of our faith. We can sing them anywhere. And the first song Tom did was a song that I think would be, which the one we did that was a traditional song with a different beat to it.
Right. Yeah, you got to be creative.
But
a lot of the counselors that come to camp, you know, this is what they know, you know, from other churches and things like that. And
it's tricky too. Do you take those songs and dissect them and look at them, from like what Emily was saying, from who we are and our theology? Because if we're not, we're singing some things that probably shouldn't be sung. And I mean, I had my own son come home with racist, sexist songs from camp that I was just horrified about. So, and I think it's so powerful. How do we?
And it leads to an issue for. I did youth ministry for the first 5 years of my ministry, and it leads to a real problem as a pastor. Kids are coming back from camp with these wonderful songs that they love to sing. Why don't we sing these in worship and all of this? And I would say, because there's no way I'm going to use this song in a worship service, because it doesn't say something that I can condone saying about God or about our fellow human beings. And so it is a real, they love the songs, they love the music. Couldn't we play with the lyrics a little bit? I mean, if it's public domain, change the words and make it true, make it positive, make it hopeful, because those are the songs that kids hang on to and remember and they do shape their theology. And then when I, as a pastor, try to teach them otherwise, I'm really working against the grain, because it's been, they've had such a positive experience, and the songs do carry such a positive emotion for them, that I'm sort of the bad guy.
What are some of the rest of you, maybe some of you that haven't spoken the other sessions?
Can I shift the discussion?
Sure.
I want to talk about multiculturalism. And how many of our songs reflect different cultures, because if we're going to serve kids from different cultures, should we be learning some Spanish songs so that when they come, they'll feel a part of it? I mean, it's because music touches our soul, it's so controversial. This Thus Far by Faith, you know, I know African-American churches won't use it because they don't like it. And I'm just curious if we all do that, because we've been trying to do that, but it's hard. I mean, it's hard to find a... Do any of you do that? I'm just curious.
You mean like a common ground for the music?
Yeah, or try to... You know, we've got staff from Malawi every summer, so we learn a couple songs, and their harmony is hard, Wayne.
Their beats are different.
Their beats are different. I mean, they're I don't know which brand they're singing on, but it's different. But I'd sure like some guidance in that, to learn some songs from other cultures, so that when kids come, or adults, they feel something similar.
Tom, can you comment on that? Because you do that in so many different
styles. Yeah, it could be a whole workshop on, you know, again, why would we sing something from another culture is another whole question, and how to do that with some integrity as well as accessibility is another question. But, I don't think it should just be to kind of spice things up, but that there's a way in which this music represents gifts that come to us from another part of the world, inspired by God's Spirit, in another part of the body of Christ. And we who have freely shared and sometimes forced our songs on other cultures, perhaps it's kind of full circle that it's time for us to willingly receive gifts from churches, and that we might not just to be hospitable to other cultures, but that in fact we might learn something from those songs, rhythmically or in harmony or theologically. I mean, there's songs from Latin America that will blow you away in terms of its theology, and understanding the nature of community. So, I mean, the specifics of the how-to, I mean, is probably a little more technical than we can get into at this in this discussion, but I do think that if singing is praying, our prayers really ought to include praying for the whole world, and sometimes maybe praying in the ways that those people pray, and singing in the ways that they sing, in order to make our prayers most inclusive. So I do think we're doing a positive thing by branching out and accepting songs from other cultures. But, you know, on the flip side, you're going to say, well, what is it that we all know together? What's our song? That's somebody else's song. What's our song? And that's a, it's not just in camps. This is happening in congregations all over the country. As new hymnals are now being created, this is the question that's being asked, is what repertoire do we have that is our own, that we know? And what new gets added to that repertoire? And when is a repertoire too large or too small or too narrow?
So. I'd sure like to have you come and do a workshop on that for us, and some, because that could be a wonderful. Because I'm hearing from African American churches and Latino and Latina churches that if their kids are going to come to camp, they want some common points, or some comfort points, or
yeah.
all the way from our artwork to everything.
I think the South African freedom songs at one time were a way of connecting.
Mm-hmm. especially if the stories behind the songs are being shared, you know, that this song comes out, this song was sung at a protest rally, and then do some education around apartheid or something. That the problem is when the songs get divorced from where they came from. But yeah, they're very easy to sing.
I think when we did that, when the campsite directed, that was the way we got in the conversation. I don't think a lot of our staff even knew what was going on, didn't know what our apartheid meant, had no idea of this, but the music opened up the conversation. Just an example.
I'm not sure I know where the music comes from that are sung in people's camps. I mean, does it come from a source, or does it rely upon a staff person that happens to come?
I think it's all over.
I'd just be interested in knowing.
Some of you sharing.
I think oftentimes it comes from the college's fellowship groups that are oftentimes not necessarily Lutheran.
Right.
And so a lot of baggage comes with the stuff that they know, but you know, some weeding usually has to happen, not always effectively. With the precious little time there is to learn new things, it's not always easy to introduce helpful alternatives, you know, in a timely way. Yeah, it is a little bit of a dilemma.
But Dave, with all your background in music and now being an executive director, you're not leading that anymore, are you?
No.
See, so most people sitting here have turned that responsibility over to somebody else or to a small group of staff or whatever. And that's when you in some ways, you lose the ability to determine things.
Shape that. Yeah.
I've always been kind of encouraging of staff to maybe even write some of their own music. And I think some of the more successful songs that I've done in my camps over the years have been songs written by some staff members who are particularly talented. And
it's a great idea.
Yeah, you know, I really have to say that. Or taken, might not always be legal, but taken songs and really revamped them for our own use. But I think I've always saw that as kind of a neat way to tap the creativity that's in the in that group.
I think too, just in mind of that, is some of our success, what I would call success, I guess, to find it as, has come from the use of instrumentation. And I've always been surprised that I can form a little brass group or a string group or some woodwinds. We do a lot of things with drums too, but they start researching what they would like to do, and you know, they draw on the hymns. You know, these little brass groups will draw on some hymns, and whoa, lo and behold, you finally got some hymns going again. You know, and so that's been kind of fun to watch some of that. And, you know, they have a little brass group at sunrise playing up in the cabin area or something. Has put a song on your lips almost all day long.
The camp that I've been most impressed with is, but it's partly because of its size too, is Christicon with Bob Quam, who really is the director, but he also has a big hand in the music. And one of the he does, I mean, I've never seen this done anyplace else. He does morning prayers. And he does them, he just announces where they're going to be. He has some hymn books out there under a stump of a tree or something, in plastic. And if you want to join him at 7 in the morning, you can join him. And if you don't want to, you don't have to. And I've been there and been a part of that when there were 4 or 5 of us. I've been there when 35 people showed up. He just goes through the morning worship, And he does the same thing every day. But by the time you've been there a while, you know it. And you've memorized it again. Because there's a rhythm to it. And I've never been in another one of our church camps that had that kind of a discipline built into it. Now that's Bob's discipline, see. So it's not, and to try that at Luther Ridge, Keith would, you know, you got too many. But he's got a size that makes that possible. Well, when you're there, it is really different because he has more control over it.
You know, I'd be interested in knowing just around this room. I mean, my impression is in talking to people that there's been lots of worship variety that has brought in some really great musical stuff. And a lot of times, you know, we throw out this phrase, the camp songs, and it's almost a negative kind of connotation that we're all struggling with all these negative things. I remember spending a week with Gary and, you know, going through beautiful Tizay stuff, you know, and Gary, you seem to, like, every night they had a different kind of focus, but it wasn't just stuff thrown together, it was, you know, how many use whole and evening prayer, and things like that in their camps. I'd just be curious what some of those are that you're using out there, because that has brought in a lot of high-quality, worshipful, good theological stuff, because there's been resources like that that we've been able to grab on. What have you used? Camp song.
Ours is a different situation, obviously, but we do comp on just once a week around here. But Scott, our musician, right now up on the balcony, has written a new comp on that we're trying out this winter that is a little more accessible maybe to some people, and it's a little different focus. Kind of reclaiming the dark, and using the basis of the hymn is from the hymn, Joyful is the Dark. So kind of that, like the matins, kind of framing the day.
It seems as I travel around during the summer and visit camps, I'm seeing people getting more in tune with maybe the more traditional, contemplative, and, you know, more people are using the LBW and with one voice. And they aren't necessarily getting rid of some of the other kind of camp songs, but I've been amazed at what I've seen and what I've heard and how really the campers are very open to that. And I think it goes back to some of the mystery and awe of sitting in a group, you know, around something, and you don't really know what's going on, but you know it's important.
You probably noticed last night the number of young people that came forward. I mean, Marvel. We sort of put young people in a box, not being interested in silence, repetitive chant, but probably the most child-friendly worship here at Holden is prayer around the cross. I mean, in terms of the act of participation. And there's a danger here in getting too much talking about worship, which we'll address the last session, and we're talking mostly about music now, but there's an overlap. And just so that we don't think that young people only want a certain kind of music, because I think that's unfair to them, just as it's unfair to older folks to not assume that we enjoy a variety of music.
And I'm sort of encouraged by hearing that camps are using more of the kind of the church, or used to be LBW, the With One Voice things, in the sense that I think so many of our teenagers are craving community because they are so isolated in their day-to-day life, despite all the technology that's supposed to connect us to each other. They're isolated from their families because they're too busy, they're isolated from their friends because there's no real sense of intimacy between people. You kind of go to the mall and you hang out, but you don't ever, you know, so camp is that time to sort of feel, and by giving them the songs that their own home community is already singing, and letting them have their own story around those songs, lets them into their home congregation in a way, instead of separating them by giving them a different set of songs that's theirs and more age appropriate, perhaps, in our minds. But I think the craving is there to know what these songs are about and why they're important and why they're meaningful to my grandparents or to my mom and dad, and to let them then shape their own experience, have their own experience as well, I think is really, because then they take that home and they're not at odds with their congregation. They can walk into it and say, yeah, we sang this song at camp, or, and I have a positive relationship then with the song, and hopefully a more positive relationship with the congregation that's singing it.
Some of us were talking about that earlier, that when we used to do more, you know, I mean, I'm glad too, John, that you're hearing more of that, because that used to be a real focus. It was, you don't talk about campus separate, you know, from the congregation, and that would connect. And so, you know, pastors would always say worship was a whole new experience because kids understood. They were coming in with their backpacks, with their little LBWs, and, you know, singing Lift High the Cross and things like that. What I found is our parishes, as I'm out every Sunday, there's no commonality anymore with LBW, and so it's really hard. So a kid may learn that at camp and never hear it at home in our, you know, a lot of our congregations. But I just don't think we can underestimate the power of music and knowing that that's so often what they're going to remember from their experience. And it happens every year, you know, that's what they'll sing over and over again, is what they heard at camp. And I really feel like, you're right, Jerry, that a lot of us, I mean, I directed 5 camps at once, but I tried to always be listening and let us dissect what we're doing, because it's so powerful. My dad died less than a year ago, and at 96, I thought of, you know, what, everything else was gone. What he could mouth was Amazing Grace and How Great Thou Art, and he'd sing those with us. And it wasn't long after that I heard from my son's room him singing Marty Haugen's Neither Life Nor Death Nor Angels Nor Rulers, you know, that wonderful Romans text. And I thought, wow, if that's the last thing that he remembers when he's 96 in a nursing home, and that's what's imprinted on his brain, I mean, that's powerful stuff. So forget those. We'll forget what's said, but we will remember those hymns and those songs. So don't turn it completely over to someone and not be aware of what they're doing, because we need to be on top of that.
You know, when you said that, I just, exactly that section of this room that I remember, our former pastor Ben had come with his 3-year-old son and a 1-month-old son. And he wasn't here a month when Sunday morning matins, which is also to me really very beautiful melodies, and there's one that says as morning breaks. It's just a beautiful melody. And so this little 3-year-old was sitting over here with his parents. Now, Forrest at that point hadn't even been taught prayers, you know, in terms of their understanding of how to pass on the faith. And I'll never forget that all of a sudden people heard Forrest in this beautiful young little boy's voice singing with all his heart as morning breaks, so that the rest of the room, I mean, even his parents were like, this, knew the words, you know, and everyone suddenly quieted so that we could hear him more clearly. Yeah. And it was just, it was a very powerful moment of watching the passing on of faith, hearing it right, you know, in the room. There is one comment that I want to make to add to this, which is that music is not without conflict, as everybody knows. And the fact that the songbooks here were hidden by whoever they were hidden is a very good symbol of every year Janet and I will go through many evaluations that say, why aren't we singing the Beanie Songs, which was another name for those books, of people who regard them with great affection. And you are not alone among people who would like to hide those books so that they would never be sung again. Our carillon, our morning chimes, which I dearly love at 7 a.m., calling people to, you know, are very controversial in terms of people. They absolutely cannot stand them. And I think when we did our Spanish week, I got this, it was the area of the greatest conflict, because the musician we had invited was from Peru. He was classically trained. He presented very challenging, wonderful music that those people who were very close to being campesinos couldn't sing, couldn't read music, and they wanted to get their guitars out with sonorous voices and sing very repetitive songs, to the point that one group was singing one kind of song in the dining room, you know, another group was over here on this porch swing, porch singing a completely different kind of music, and the musician was over here. It provoked a great deal of really good conversation. But I don't think we can put unity up here as the top thing and not recognize that music also, because it is emotional.
The vibes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same as our church today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very much.
Mm. You've got one group saying you're culturally irrelevant because you're singing, you know, German songs from the 16th century. Mm-hmm. Then you've got another group saying you're throwing out all this that has such a rich history, and as far as I'm concerned, you're both wrong. I mean, it's not either or.
I'm the parent of a young camper, and I'm profoundly aware of how powerful recording technology is. To have, because we have the tapes that come home with us from, well, DBS has been in the past, but also now from battle camps. And those, of course, are the tapes that many kids pick and will sing along with, and they know every single word they heard. And so that's a really powerful reinforcement of what a pickup at camp is, perhaps a tool to introduce stuff to staff. If you have really good stuff that they don't know, it's a really good way to learn stuff. But it's just a really important thing, I think, to realize that what kids are listening to on their machines has a big impact on what they're going to sing. And because I don't, my wife and I don't have music of Northern European hymnody, playing at home. They tend not to resonate with that. They resonate with stuff that sounds more like what they'll hear around the house. And that's partly our fault. It's kind of neat here at Holden having less of that, and so that they're starting to pick up stuff that we sing in worship, because that's what they're hearing every day. But it has to be stuff that's more like stuff that they'll hear on the blue box.
Thank you all for your sharing, Dan.
Yeah, well, it reinforces something that was already said, that several years ago I was in the room down at the end right next to the porch, and there's a window right next to the balcony, and for some reason that winter this was a gathering place of the children. It was kind of their secret place, not knowing that I was right behind the window writing next to them, but the children gathered there once on their own. And they sang the entire Holden evening prayer by heart, including the leader parts, and just beautiful. And nobody, no adult was anything to do with this. And it just reinforces the power of singing.
And I noticed tonight when I haven't worshipped with this kind of community, but in the past, probably at least a third of the people will not take books when they come in tonight for Holden evening prayer because they know it by heart, and that would include young people.
Yeah.
So notice that tonight when we worship.
Tom, I'd be curious what your take is on this. Why is it that we have gone, so many different directions with our religious, sacred, church music all of a sudden here? I mean, all of a sudden it's just, pow! And the struggle is then, we always feel initially that, well, there's a right way to do it and there's other ways. And what's going on here that has spread us out so far? I guess it's a good thing, but where is it going to end? Where is it leading?
I'm aware of the time. We
make sure we get over 2 minutes
to,
or less.
To lunch on time.
That's a huge question. Yeah. But,
it's precisely what, and I hope everyone's aware that this is a an interim resource of the ELC and on for portraits of, you know, they're trying to figure out that same thing. There is just a ton of new music out there, and some of it's really good and some of it's not. And there's old music that some of it needs to be kept near and dear to our hearts and some of it needs to be discarded. And people wildly disagree about, you know, there's arguments between Norwegians and Germans on these hymnal committees about harmonization. But I mean, some of it is, it has to do with publishing houses, and some of it has to do with just the nature of who we are as a church now is different than who we were 25, 40 years ago in terms of our hymnody. Hopefully, I think every resource from now on is going to be a big grab bag of stuff from all sorts of traditions. I don't think there's any turning back from that because we are no longer a Scandinavian church or a German church. So music will come from all different places and there will be all different styles and it won't just be five stanza hymns, but there's going to be repetitive chant, there's going to be call and response, and there's going to be, but we're also not going to discard what is most precious to us. So it's, I don't envy any of those people's task of sorting that out, but it's a serious question of what it is we sing together. And maybe even specific communities have their own songs that become, I mean, that your camp has its flavor to it. But we can never go back to a sort of a narrower, I just don't think it will ever happen. But there's a lot more to say about that, and it's hard to address it in just a couple minutes.
Maybe even in the worship session. Do you have any announcements, people?
Just a reminder that when we come back at 1, be prepared to go outside if you're going to go on the ops tour.
That's okay. And prayer is?
It's Keith.
Keith, I'm sorry.
And I've never met Tom before, but I've learned that when we say thank you, he'll say you're welcome. You have been a wonderful gift to me, and I think to the rest of us too, because you have stirred my soul, and I've learned new songs. And after you play them through once, and we sing them twice, now they're a part of me. And we've talked about it, but rather than talk about it or pray about it, Tom's going to lead us in singing our close.